To learn means to be in a state of play, to live a life of curiosity, a life of inspiring one another, a life of connecting with each other, and a life of real conversations. Welcome to Natural Learning. Hello and welcome to the Life of Learning podcast and channel. So today I thought I'd just go over a bit of an article which I found quite interesting and again make a few comments. Obviously we've got this whole coronavirus thing happening, and there was an interesting article that I saw about, which was an opinion piece basically about a mother's view of basically school happening at home, so what she calls homeschooling. Homeschool life, I feel like I'm failing my kids. And so I just wanted to check this out. So there we go, we've got a nice wee picture there. Alright, now let's make a start. So I'll just read it and then I'll just share some of my thoughts along the way. Over 2 weeks have passed since the schools closed and my kids have been at home. There is nothing more important to me than my children's safety, so I am overjoyed that they are safe in our bubble. My partner and I are some of the lucky ones who have retained their employment. He is classed as a supplier for essential workers and goes to work every day, while I have the ability to work from home. Sounds great, doesn't it? Then why do I feel like I'm failing? With the schools out, homeschooling is our new reality. Between two kids, the schools have provided me with all these different apps that I need to download and sign up to for access to schoolwork and assignments. Even my year one child has 6 different applications to use, all these apps plus a separate one for the school itself for all the parent notices. And here I fail. Full-time working and full-time parenting is a tough job in itself, and we've been asked to be full-time teachers as well. I struggle on a daily basis to complete all the tasks across all these apps and juggle teaching the two kids 2 different sets of curriculums at the same time. What I find interesting is that this gives you a bit of a snapshot into what teaching is kind of all about. I mean, again, this is, if parents are feeling like they're the teacher, then what do they think their actual teachers do? And in many ways, you know, the teachers are being asked to do many things as well. And them asked to juggle all these things as well and make use of the different apps that the school asks them to use and whatever it might be. And obviously the thing that I would say to this mother first and foremost is, you know, just let go. Like, why do you need to follow what the school asks you to do? And this is mentality that we have, is that we need to keep following the instructions that somebody else is giving us, because we can't do it ourselves. And does give you a bit of an idea as to what teachers are doing. I mean, she's saying that she's struggling to take a little bit of time each day to teach 2 different kids 2 different sets of curriculums at the same time. Well, what do you think happens within a classroom of 25 where there's 25 different children, all who essentially do need a different curriculum? Well, I might come back to that later, but that's the thing, is like, well, what do you think happens? What do you think happens in classrooms when you're trying to do the best for each individual, but you've got 25 of them? You don't have time for that. And so yeah, I mean, I can understand her sort of frustration. But yeah, this is quite an interesting way of thinking. She carries on saying, talking about time, can someone please find the mythical parallel universe for me where I can work in one and teach my kids in the other, maybe 3 of them, so that I can teach each kid in separate ones and work in one. And again, this is kind of this mindset of, again, like, because people haven't taken that responsibility of, yeah, you've completely outsourced the education of your children to somebody else. And so the thinking even about, okay, how do my children actually learn? What is it they learn? How do they learn? People, when people are confronted with this, they have no idea. who are these people in my own house? I don't know how they learn. Like, I don't know what's important to them, what they're interested in, what should come next or whatever. And that's, I think for me, it speaks more of a lack of connection, really. And obviously, I applaud that this lady is putting these things out in public, and she is going to be criticized, obviously, by me as well. But that's the thing, is that she's not the only one thinking these things. She goes on to say, "My breaks these days are made up of me trying to log in slash open apps to find the assignments and try to squeeze in whatever I can. I even answered some of the questions for my year one child because she was taking too long and my break was up." And this is the thing, is this is exactly what happens at school as well, in essence, is you structure time for students to do certain things. You say, okay, they're going to spend 10 minutes on this or that, and then they don't get it done. Like, they don't follow your timetable. Or some kids might get it done, and they might get it done really quickly, and others don't, and they all do at various speeds because some of them are more interested in it and some of them are less. And that's the thing, is why, asking the question, why was her year one child taking so long? Was it actually interesting? It's just like this mindset of, well, we need to get through the work. We need to get through the work. Otherwise, something bad is going to happen, and this is going to become apparent throughout the article, that if we don't get through the work, something bad is going to happen. And then, she's like cheating her own mind in terms of she's doing the year one child's work for her as well. And that's the thing. I mean, a lot of schooling is about the look. It's not about actually producing anything of value. It's not about making sure that, in terms of whether the children learn anything, in a sense, is sometimes irrelevant. It's more, does it look like they're learning something? And I mean, I've seen this in and when we do parent-teacher interviews and those sorts of things. Here we go. "Getting kids to do their studies in the afternoon is great, and I'm sure a lot of parents are doing exactly that. Our work usually finishes up around 6 p.m., and then the juggle starts with getting dinner ready and trying to teach. Dinner wins almost every time." Well, yeah. How exciting is the schoolwork? Probably not very exciting. And yeah, you pushing them to do it. Again, what do you expect teachers are doing in the classroom? Sure, they maybe found some other more manipulative ways of trying to push things, but at the end of the day, yeah, they're trying to push things onto children. And yes, I realize, I understand that parents have divorced themselves from the education of their children so much that they don't realize that this is necessarily going on, but this is what schooling is. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. She sounds a little bit sarcastic in terms of saying getting kids to do their studies in the afternoon is great. Again, why are they taking so long to do this work? Is it because they don't really care about the work and actually it's not that interesting to them? And yeah, of course, dinner's gonna win every time. And then she goes on. "Have you tried teaching kids new concepts after dinner? Have you succeeded? If so, please tell me how you have achieved the impossible." Again, that's not impossible. There have been plenty of people who have taught their children how to do things after dinner. But basically, all of those things are if the child is wanting to learn them. And if you have having a conversation after dinner and you talk about things and the child is really fascinated, then you have a conversation and the child learns some things. But if you go and after dinner, where they've had dinner, they're starting to get tired, they're at the end of the day, and then you ask them to do more things, and you are again trying to dictate their lives to a high degree, they're just over it at that time. So yes, that kind of thing is teaching. If an adult directed driven teaching after dinner, yes, it might be impossible, but again, why are you doing that? The school holidays came as a relief for me, as the school decided not to give homework for the break. However, we may need to continue homeschooling after the holidays. I can't help but feel that not only will I fail, but that my kids will fall behind. Neither my partner nor I can afford to quit our jobs. Our lives are hard enough, but is this our only option? I mean, there's so much in this. Firstly, okay, so the kids are having a holiday, and are you scared that they'll fail during the holiday, that they'll fall behind during the holiday? Or do you think that children learn all at the same speed? And that, you know, everybody sort of stops, all the kids stop learning when the holidays come, and then 2 weeks later, after the holidays, everybody starts learning again, and everybody's learning at the same pace, and your children, if they're not going to school and all the rest, and doing all the work, that they're going to fall behind. Again, that's like, I guess, what is our mindset around all of this? What I'd like to just bring in here is this whole idea of, because like kids have had holidays for ages and they've taken breaks longer than 2 weeks. And obviously like summer break, that's whether you're down here in New Zealand or whether you're in the States or wherever you are in the world, children generally have a summer break and it tends to be longer than 2 weeks. And so this is the thing, like people worry about this falling behind. And there's also something that people call summer slide, and this is where supposedly kids fall behind in their learning over summer. And there's a few points to be made about that. Particularly, there's an author called Kerry McDonald, and she points out that, well, firstly, if kids are falling behind, if they're losing everything that they learned over summer, then did they actually learn it in the first place? Well, maybe just jump quickly to that article. And it's interesting, she, Kerry McDonald, quotes John Holt, who's a quite a famous sort of educationalist. And in his 1964 best-selling book, How Children Fail, Boston-based educator John Holt writes, "No matter what tests show, very little of what is taught in school is learned. Very little of what is learned is remembered, and very little of what is remembered is used. The things we learn, remember, and use are the things we seek out or meet in the daily, serious, non-school parts of our lives." And yeah, this is the thing, is that and we've all heard the phrase, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. And this is the thing, is because a lot of what we learn in school, learn in school, are not things that are actually useful to the general child, nor even to the general adult. And so, yeah, of course, we're going to summer slide in that sort of sense. That's because we never really learned it in the first place, because it's not actually useful to our lives, and it doesn't really stay in our memory. It can stay in our memory to a certain extent for the use of a test. Possibly we can cram certain memorization tasks into a test, but then that's the reason why we're memorizing them, and they don't go into our long-term memory, in terms of because they're only useful for a short series of time. But what I also wanted to talk about with summer slide, and you know, people thinking, well, you need to get them back to school and otherwise everything goes wrong and you know, it's the end of the world, they lose everything that they've learned. There's another great author is Peter Gray, and this is from his article titled Facts and Fiction About So-Called Summer Slide. And he makes the same point as Kerry McDonald, and he kind of links it in there. But then he goes a little bit further and looks at some of the research around all of this. And so he looks into the research and he realizes that there have been a few studies into this, and he notes that in terms of reading in particular, that there is either no significant change or an increase in reading ability over summer. And that seems to make sense, because children actually are not forced to just read the books that they're supposed to read, but they've actually got a lot more time to read for pleasure, to read for enjoyment. And so their reading actually increases, and they spend a lot more time reading often, and so their reading ability increases. What does seem to happen is that there seems to be a decline in their mathematical ability. So why do kids learn lose some of their mathematical abilities over summer? And the interesting thing is that you need to actually split maths up a little bit. So Peter Gray talks about that math calculation declines over summer, but math reasoning actually increases over summer. And what we mean by that is that yes, children will lose their ability to do various calculations. So there's certain algorithms that addition and subtraction, multiplication, division, all those sort of rote learned things, they will lose those over summer, basically because they don't use them and they're not really useful to their lives in a large extent, and other things like that, that they don't actually use much. So those sort of things will probably decline over summer, and they do in these various tests. But maths reasoning then increases, and that also makes sense because throughout summer you're doing really practical stuff. You're outside, and the kids are solving problems constantly, especially when they've got more time to themselves, and they're not being so adult directed all the time. And so they're solving problems, and so their reasoning ability actually increases. And so that makes sense. So again, it depends on what is it that we really want. And yes, this might actually be a great time for your kids to lose some of those skills that people have been forcing on them and that aren't actually valuable to their lives, and for them to focus on those things, on those abilities that actually bring value to their lives, like being able to read books for enjoyment and for pleasure and for information, and learning to solve problems through their reasoning. And so Peter Gray gives a few examples of some of these tests that have been done and some of this research that has been done. And I guess I find the very last part of this also rather interesting, where the person in this article, the lady in this article, says, "Neither my partner nor I can afford to quit our jobs. Our lives are hard enough, but is this our only option?" And again, here there's always this big question around this, of not being able to afford to quit your job. I don't see that in a lot of people. I'm guessing, this seems to be quite a well-written sort of article. I'm guessing that they're probably reasonably middle class. She's a pretty middle class sort of person, and that's the thing, is that where are your priorities? And that's, I know that's sort of a harsh thing to say, but I'm not just saying that to be harsh, because I actually do see a lot of parents and families making choices regarding their family living conditions and in a variety of other things, where they've actually gone, actually, there's more important priorities in our life than having a nice house in a nice suburb, and that we have to pay for all these extra things. So yeah, take that time to reflect on, take this time to reflect on what is it that I really need, how much do I actually need to be working. And yes, obviously people have put themselves into positions of things like having a mortgage and all the rest of it, but again, I mean, yes, you've put yourself into these situations where things are now really intense financially, but again, can you, what is a way that you can get yourself out of these holes that you've put yourself in? And instead of just continuing on and thinking that you need to see things through, and this is kind of the mindset that we often, I think, get into, is we have these what we call, I guess, in economics, sunk costs, which is basically this idea that if we invest in something, we're more likely to keep on investing in it. Even if it means that we're digging ourselves deeper into something, we're like, oh, well, I've already invested this much into it, so I can't back out now. And so, like, yeah, and this is like what we do with all sorts of things, like, same with careers and other things like that, is we think, oh, well, I'm already this far into my career, you know, I can't give it up because I've put all this effort into it and all this money and yeah. But at the end of the day, we need to ask ourselves the question, okay, but what is our priority? And what is actually the best option? It's not a question of what have we already invested in, but what's the best option going forward? So yeah, I just ask, like, is this time that we've got during this lockdown and whatever else is happening within your world at the moment, you know, is this time to think about investing in a different direction? Is this a time to be investing in some different priorities and letting go of some of those previous investments which you thought were getting you where you wanted to go, but actually they're not getting you to the things that you actually prioritize in life? And so yeah, this is a great time, I think, to think about those sorts of things. And also, when it comes to education and learning, you know, if you would like to have that conversation with someone, I'm most willing to do so. So do let me know. Again, the details of just especially jump onto my Facebook and, you know, like the page, and then just message me and get in touch, and we'll put something together, and I can work with you and have some more conversations with you to get further along this path. Alrighty. Well, hope that has been very enlightening and interesting, and we'll talk to you all soon. Thanks. Bye.